Hallo und herzlich willkommen im Etablissement, heute mit einer kleinen Sonderausgabe aus den USA. Letzte Woche hatte ich ja Gelegenheit, mit Bailey Williams und Emma Horwitz zu sprechen, die gerade im Here Performing Arts Center ihr neues Stück gezeigt haben. Und kaum 3 Tage nach Veröffentlichung dieser Episode hat das Here Performing Arts Center die Nachricht erhalten, dass eine ganz entscheidende Förderung gestrichen wurde. Das Ganze findet statt quasi im Rahmen der drastischen Kürzungen, die Donald Trump angekündigt hat. Er hat ja ins Auge gefasst, das National Endowment for the Arts, NEA, nicht mehr weiter zu finanzieren, und prompt hat die Behörde auch begonnen, versprochene Förderungen zurückzuziehen. Und es sieht so aus, dass davon die gesamte Theaterlandschaft in den USA betroffen ist. Die entsprechenden E-Mails kamen von einer arts.gov-Adresse und gingen so gegen Abend bei den FörderempfängerInnen ein, darunter eben auch das Here Performing Arts Center. Ich hatte Gelegenheit, über die brenzlige Situation mit Lauren Miller zu sprechen, die gemeinsam mit 3 KollegInnen dieses Haus leitet. Diesmal wünsche ich nicht viel Spaß beim Gespräch.
Can you tell me a little bit first of all, because probably the people in Germany won't know what Here Performing Arts Center is, or the history, a little bit just about the place in general.
Absolutely, yeah. So Here Arts Center, we're celebrating our 31st anniversary this year. It was founded by 4 artists
as a home for like multidisciplinary and interdisciplinary art making. So we have 2 different venues, our main stage and then our Dorothy B. Williams Theater downstairs. And sort of on any given night of the week, you could see anything from theater to opera to puppetry to like new media and sort of any iteration in between. It was until very recently led primarily by artistic director emerita Kristen Merting, who's an iconic force in downtown theater. And then last July, myself and my 3 other co-directors, Jesse Cameron Alec, Annalisa Diaz, and Lansing Fu, became the new second generation of leadership at Here.
And what happened now with the funding cuts? Maybe you can talk me through it a little bit. What happened?
Absolutely. Well, for Here, we get support through the National Endowment on the Arts for our sort of flagship commissioning program, which is called the HARP program, which stands for the Here Artist Residency Program. This is a really, I think, sort of like first in its class kind of commissioning program. It's a program that we cherish, one that we want to like expand upon and grow and sort of iterate on to make sure that it's like continuing to meet the needs of the field. But the NEA support of that program was really important to its success.
What kind of projects did you fund through this program?
We typically at this point are commissioning 3 different artists per year, and then they get sort of developmental and production support of a world premiere production over the course of, let's say, 2 to 3 years. So, you know, there's been all kinds of work that's been developed through HARP. This season, we've had 3 shows that have sort of graduated from the HARP program. This fall, yeah, we have a production called Emile by dance theater group called LeMay. Then recently, we had a show called Untitled Miniature by Joshua Gelb. And that was a wacky sort of hybrid digital performance. And then a really pretty extraordinary. And then right now we have a show called Rayology by Shayak Misha Chowdhury, Pulitzer Prize finalist for Public Obscenities, which is also, man, I wish you could come back to New York because you got to see that show. It's like,
I wanted to see it. I somehow missed it. Somehow it didn't fit through the calendar, but maybe, yeah.
come back. We just extended to May 17th.
Okay. So it sounds like a very diverse kind of thing you produce with this grant
or
with
That's
this
correct.
With this funding. Okay.
In recent years, we have gotten a pretty large grant from the National Endowment on the Arts for this program of $50,000. This past year, we successfully got that grant increased to $75,000, which is amazing. Like,
yeah,
when we got that news, we got the news of that the same week as the last presidential election. So like 2 days after Trump was reelected to a second term, we get this really extraordinary news out of Washington that, like, oh my God, like, if we can get 50% more funding for this program, can we provide like even more robust support to our artists? It secures the program. As philanthropy has changed and certain funders have changed priorities, as corporate giving has sort of diminished over the past several years, as we're all still recovering from COVID, it was just such like a boost of security and confidence in the program. Mm-hmm. So we were very much
decided upon like by the last administration.
That's right. And I think, you know, the way that it works is, you know, the administration often just sets, you know, the priorities for here are the priorities for the arts. And then through a panel process of, you know, like our applications that we submit are then evaluated by peers in the field. And then the grants are administered by the, you know, civil servants who work within the National Endowment of the Arts. And so some combination of panel review and NEA staff mm-hmm. made the determination that this program not only deserved continued support, but increased support.
Yeah.
And at the time that we applied for and were awarded these funds, we were operating under the previous administration's priorities. I haven't looked at this in enough detail to be totally confident in this, but I've been in this, you know, fundraising game for the arts for a very long time. You know, I fundraised all through Trump's first term.
Yeah.
And actually he has appointed the same exact person to head that agency from his first term, Marianne Carter. And from my recollection, the priorities of the agency didn't really change all that much from administration to administration. It's also worth saying that like the NEA is such a small budget. It gives away $160 million across the entire nation. So it's, you know, it's often just sort of an afterthought, I would say, in the federal government. It is pennies on their balance sheet. And so this is a remarkable change because in his second term, Trump has explicitly changed the priorities of that funding entity, some of which I question whether or not they're legal at all. And when we applied for and were awarded these funds, those were not the priorities that were in place. So we submitted projects that were eligible. We were deemed to be eligible. We did every single step along the way to say, yes, we are continuing to do the project for which you have been awarded. Then we experienced a lot of delays. It was a little unclear to us whether they were just sort of bureaucratic slowdowns because of staffing shortages or confusion in the transition period between administrations. Perhaps something was happening at OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, which sort of helps to like administer these transactions on the federal level. But it was, we basically got this offer. We submitted the paperwork we needed to move that offer to an award. And then the process slowed and stopped. And then last Friday at 8:00, we got an email from the federal government saying that your offer has been withdrawn. Other peers in the field got a different letter that if they had moved from offer to award, their letter said that their offer had been terminated. I think all of us in the field are still trying to understand what any of that means. The evidence suggests that this is a wholesale defunding of federal arts funding across the nation. Yeah.
This application, they will not give you another, I don't know, $75,000, or do you have to pay back something, or is it something you already like calculated or make calculations with, like we want to spend this on this and projects, and now you have to stop those projects? Or how does this impact you?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah. So because we had gotten this award 7 months ago, had already sort of factored it into our projections for the fiscal year we're currently in. So, and we have proceeded with programming as usual. So of course, $75,000 is not nearly enough to fund the entire program. We already rely on philanthropic support to make any of this possible. But yeah, we don't have to pay anyone back. We're just never getting the check we were expecting to get. And that means that we will now have to vigorously appeal this and see if there is some way that we can get the agency to reverse the decision.
Yeah.
Or we have to turn to philanthropy to help fill the gap. But, you know, again, if it's $160 million across the country that is being filled, that would require a pretty big angel philanthropist to go over and beyond the giving they already do just to get us all back to whole. We did launch a grassroots fundraising appeal right as soon as we got the notification. We went out to our community and said, listen, we're going to fight this, but every little bit helps. And it's been really like moving to see that, you know, we've had, you know, dozens of folks giving gifts as little as $5 to say, like, we care about you. And we're going to give it till the end of the week before we share the results of that with the world. Thank our donors. We're going to just tell our donors, you know, it's not an extraordinary sum of money. We have not raised $75,000 off of one email. Wish that's how it worked. That's not how it worked. Yeah. But like, I think what is really astounding is the number of people who have participated with as much money as they can afford. And I hope that we can also use that as an example for those who have more to give more in this moment, not just to here, but to any arts organization that's being impacted right now.
Yeah. What do you think is like the message behind the whole thing?
It's hard to know because I think that from what we can tell, from what we've seen, what people have shared, there doesn't seem to be sort of a strong through line through any of it. I saw one organization, I think it's called the Brooklyn Youth Theater or something like that. They shared the letter that they got from the government and it said, unfortunately, your grant purpose does not align with the administration's priorities. And then they share the grant purpose. And the purpose says to provide free theater education to children. And the administration was like bold enough to say, that's not a priority of ours. I mean, that's a pretty shocking statement to make. When it comes to some of our other friends in the field, like the National Queer Theater, for instance, their mission is explicitly to support queer artists and trans artists. And we already know, based on the administration's other actions, that they are absolutely trying to eliminate and erase trans stories and queer people. It would make sense ideologically, given that. That an organization like National Queer Theater would be quite vulnerable. For the rest of us, it's a little bit murky. So is there certainly a culture war thing possible? Absolutely. And Trump's last term and in this term, you know, he proposes completely eliminating the National Endowment of the Arts constantly. It's a constant threat. It actually often fails in a normal in normal times, because even if people on the right in America, who, you know, representatives, senators, et cetera, even if they say we should defund the NEA because it's a wasteful and extravagant expense on our national budget, they all know that not to be true. It's a penny. It's so little money in context. And they all actually really love their arts institutions back in their red states, because those arts institutions are like really contributing to the local economy and culture. We provide incredibly important public health outcomes. They don't want to eliminate it. They want to say it. They want to threaten it because it plays well, but they don't actually want to act on it.
They want to see theater.
They want to come to our opening nights. Of course they do. We're so fun. Like, you might be right wing, but who doesn't love watching the Nutcracker at Christmas time, right?
Yeah. That's what I always say in Germany. Like, everything is so interconnected. They have no idea. Like, you can't cut the small stuff without hurting the big.
Yes. You
know, because they are also all stealing from the small experimental stuff aesthetically, you know?
I think the important difference and distinction in this moment is that there is a wholesale defunding that is happening. It's not happening legislatively. They are not going to Congress necessarily to do this. They're doing it through Elon Musk's DOGE, Department of Governmental Excess, or whatever it's called. And doing it in ways that appear to be potentially illegal, unclear, both in the new priorities that they have listed, some of which are like to support faith-based institutions with federal dollars, which really seems to butt against the church and state division that our country was founded upon. But like, also just the way in which they retracted these funds, it's unclear to us whether he has the power to do it. So I wonder if what this is about is less about a culture war and more about Trump's testing of all of our institutions to see if I poke at it, will the institution stand, and sort of to discover the limits of his power so it can further his larger project. That's me speaking on behalf of myself, private citizen, not on behalf of our institution. We have to remember that the arts are not a priority for this federal government whatsoever. So it begs the question, what are they actually after when they're making these cuts?
Yeah. But how does it feel to work in such an environment? I'm just wondering, like, is it frightening or something that you think like, oh, if we make this step, that could happen? Oh, is this project too out there? Is it too trans? Is it too, I don't know what, black? that you suddenly think, censor yourself? I mean, you probably won't, but that's maybe the danger of this?
That is the danger. I think that, and that is perhaps what they're hoping, the effect that they're hoping to have, is sort of a chilling effect on all of us. I will say personally, I do not fear that. I don't fear it because...
You don't seem like a person who fears that.
Yeah, I don't. I don't fear it because I feel confident that the purpose of our organization is to reflect the world that's around us. And in this world, trans people exist and Black and brown people exist and immigrants exist. If we start to erase them from the stories that we tell on our stage, then we are no longer... serving the duty of care that we have to our public. If we start doing that, then we no longer deserve to exist, I think. And likewise, if we go out there and continue telling the stories that we need to tell, and it creates some sort of backlash and it harms us in some material way, we will have to organize in other ways to make sure that we can keep telling our stories. Or we have a bigger problem on our hands, and we will have to look towards that sort of urgent problem of truly a complete takeover of our civic life. So, you know, I think there are risks that are worth taking and risks that are not. We are absolutely doing everything in our power to keep the individual people that we are responsible to safe. So we are thinking, okay, what information should be out there? But in terms of like the content of the work that we're doing, we are fully committed to continuing to tell the truth.